This episode was created with the support of Free FM, Hamilton, New Zealand's community access media organisation. Visit us at freefm.org.nz.
Kia ora and welcome to Free Left Turn here on 89.0 Independent Community Media. Kia ora, Fred.
Good morning.
Well, good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Top of the morning. Beautiful day.
Yes.
This is one occasion I can say that I came here hot foot, both literally and figuratively.
Yeah, so how is your foot, Mick?
It's niggling.
Niggling? Yeah. Not much sleep last night?
2 hours.
Two hours? Yeah. And do tell what you've had done to your foot.
A nail removed.
Okay. Yeah, did you keep it? Are you going to use it as a necklace?
No, that's
a hay tiki on
it's
your...
It's gone in the medical waste.
Okay. Did they offer you? Did they ask you about it?
Yeah, they did, actually. I thought, well, no, I don't really want a toenail.
Okay, but it's nice that they get...
Well, you know, if you have an operation, they have something removed, they say, oh, do you want... Like, I was offered my old knee if I wanted it.
Oh, okay.
So apparently it must be some sort of cultural thing.
It is.
Yeah. Some communities... They'll bury it,
or something intact. And I imagine, we mainly get it from what we have of Māori culture, etc. But I imagine you go back into our European culture, this is pre-Christian and when we were tribal and all that. Uh-huh. I imagine we had sort of things like that as well. If you lost your limb and a sword went off, did they just chuck it away or did they... Did we have it? Do anything with it, or what? You know, about the Vikings or all our different tribes. You know, we probably had beliefs in those times.
Yeah, more than likely, Fred.
Yeah, they
have similar things like what Maori do with placenta, for example.
Yeah, I would imagine. Yeah. I imagine there would have been sort of rituals,
fertility stuff.
And things about death and the afterlife and all that.
They want to be intact when they go.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or complete.
Yeah. Or so they say.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So it is a nice day. Daylight saving starts.
Yeah, hallelujah.
Yeah.
I'm a tramp. No.
So daylight saving, is it?
On Sunday.
You put the clocks forward?
All the way through to the 6th of April.
Yeah, so it's quite a long stretch, this one.
Yeah.
Because it's coming right at the end of September.
Because I'm retired, it doesn't really affect me in that sense. I suppose the only way it affects me will be the cars will disturb my sleep in the morning when they leave for work.
you have to get up an hour early. Oh, yeah.
But then everyone gets the sun in the afternoon and,
I wonder if Araruah is still going through their same, what is it?
Well, they had a resistance to it, didn't they?
Yeah, for many years.
That's probably well gone to bed, I suppose.
Haven't heard anything.
No.
Yeah, they did experiment some years back. I remember they kept the clocks forward for 2 years.
Okay.
And then they decided they'd go back to the old system of going backwards and forwards.
Okay, yeah.
Oh, it was great for 2 years. It's just got a bit of extra daylight.
Yeah.
I think the clocks were put forward half an hour. And were never put back. I think that goes back in the 1920s, I think.
Okay.
Because they always talk about these things that people getting up at daybreak and it's 4:30 in the morning. Well, from my recollection, it doesn't look like daybreak. Yeah.
Well, what happened, what happened when before we had timepieces and that? Did we just wake up according to when the sun came up? Do we sleep in more as people's in the winter?
Daylight saving was brought in to increase production during war.
Factories. Okay. Yeah.
I think we just have a body clock that, and it's probably.
It's never worried. Some people swear by it, it upsets their biorhythms or whatever.
Yeah.
If the clock says 10 o'clock, it's 10 o'clock. I don't worry about thinking, oh, it's an hour.
Yeah, well, your old forms of measuring time.
Mm. When I'm tired, instead of going to bed at 7:30, I'll be going to bed at 6:30. That's getting quite early in the evening, isn't it?
Mm. Yeah. Sundials, inverted, hourglasses and that stuff, to tell time. But I think being that we're an animal, we would have some inherent connection.
Well, I imagine in early times, of course it was wet or whatever, you couldn't go and do a lot of the jobs, so you stayed in your cave and looked up, looked for Mary or Phil.
Or drew
pictures on the wall if Mary was busy. Phil was busy.
Phil the Neanderthal.
Yeah.
Oh, I think we've still got them around, haven't we? Yeah, we currently run the country.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, yeah.
Okay, we'll go to the almanac. It is the 28th of September.
Yeah, another month almost done.
Yeah, 28th of September, 1975. Three black liberation activists held up the Knightsbridge branch of the Spaghetti House chain in London.
What year was this?
1975.
I was over here.
Okay. Yeah. At the end of at the end of a Saturday evening, hoping to steal the weekly takings, the robbery went wrong and police arrived, so the men called themselves the Black Liberation Army, took staff hostage and demanded safe passage out of the country. After a 5-day siege by hundreds of police, they surrendered.
Yeah.
Good sounds like Hancock's half hour.
Did they go to jail?
Well, they probably did.
Yeah.
And in 1991, leading Labour organiser Sankar Guha Nyogi was assassinated in his sleep at midnight in Bilal, India. Nyogi, who had successfully led efforts to organise cement factory workers and contract coal miners, as well to establish healthcare and cultural programs for poor workers and peasants, had angered many industrialists whose profits had suffered as a result.
Well, and it continues today, doesn't it?
Yeah. Right. He was murdered by a hired gunman, Poulton Malar. In 1997, several capitalists were convicted, along with Malar, of conspiracy to murder. In 2005, whoop-de-doo, in a judgment that caused widespread dismay in India, the industrialists' convictions were overturned by the Supreme Court.
Mm.
Sounds like the old,
One law for me and one for thee.
Definitely.
Strange that. Yeah.
Very.
A recurring theme, isn't it? Really?
Yeah, it is.
They get away with it.
Yeah.
Is a better way of putting it.
Hmm.
So, what do you got today for us, Mick?
Well, I see that the Greens are going to change their name.
Oh!
The Green Party's made an official application to change its name, dropping the Greens. In the future, it'll be, if they get it, go ahead, the Greens and the Green Party of Aotearoa New Zealand will be replaced with the Green Party of Aotearoa New Zealand.
Name change.
So it's just a bit of pedantics.
It's pedantic,
yeah. Okay.
And, of course, the controversy between Darlene and Tana goes on.
Yeah, which is sad because it distracts from the Greens' role as sort of trying to do their bit against when they're arguing with the government or pointing out what they think the government's doing wrong, and they've been distracted by internal messy stuff. Yeah.
But her case was chucked out of the the court, wasn't it?
Was it?
The judge found in favour of the other part of the argument.
Yeah. So I suppose what you can do, I guess, is to think, they've had this conversation, should we go to longer terms? The thing is, if you do get a rogue MP or anything else and they won't resign, it is only 3 years. It's 3 years of taxpayers' money, and that's their bad.
Yeah.
If they just take it, maybe she might be doing something for it, and she could well be. But she was appointed on the list, so she does have a bit of a, in my view, you stand up and you say, I'm standing for this party, and you say, I don't want to do that anymore. You didn't get voted in as your name. You got voted. You got on the list. You got sure. You got your voted in for what list number you got? No doubt.
Yeah.
In internal politics. But then, yeah, is it right or is it wrong?
Well, I think that if a judgment's been found that she's definitely in the wrong, she should go.
Whole thing.
So it opens the door for them to act that the walker jumping.
Yeah, but it's sort of sad and it costs money and, and, you know, this is the same thing.
And as a voter, you'd be annoyed that you voted for her as your party vote and they decided to jump ship.
And she was, let's face it, she's very capable. She got a large vote in Northland, et cetera, and worked very hard as a campaigner and is quite, you know.
Yeah, but...
It's a pity, but I say, got tangled up in between private and public office and, you know.
My view, she should go.
I do too. But I say at the end of the day, if she digs her toes in, you know. Which she obviously has, you know. So,
And I see that the most leaving emergency housing for home minister. Another sharp drop in families being housed in unsuitable dank motels. Been celebrated by the government. Well, I hope it's true that they are finding more. They said that the Ministry of Social Development data showed 1,215 households were in emergency housing at the end of August, including 1,335 adults and 1,101 kids. So they reckon it's a significant 64% decrease from the same time in 2023.
Is this because Christopher Luxon and Nicola Willis have opened their holiday homes for emergency housing or not?
Who knows?
Could be.
But I hope it is true that they're finding, but they're having to go through social housing or private rentals.
There's a big but. All jokes aside, the other thing I wonder what bearing is our migration. People have left to go to Aussie and other places. Because rent, even the pressure on rentals is coming down a bit. There might be more available, what they call housing stock.
It's kind of fickle, though, depending on.
Oh, of course it is.
On
of course
demographics.
It is.
And of course, if you haven't got any money, it's really fickle because you're at the mercy of what the state can provide. You know?
Well, apparently, currently, people announce. That people in emergency housing for more than 7 months would have to meet obligations such as paying an emergency housing contributions or looking at private rentals.
Some of that's so expensive too.
Some people might be helped out, but I rather suspect that some people won't get any help and they'll be languishing.
You do notice, though. I notice when you drive around the city now, and that's a credit to the Labor government, et cetera, previous, there's far more what I call social housing, et cetera, gone up. It's quite noticeable
when you drive around,
somewhere else, and I thought, over Dinsdale, and there's a lot more, and some of it won't be social housing in a sense, but it's developers and whatever, and they've got four or five or six units on a section, next door to your place, and as long as they're looked after, etc., there's nothing wrong with that because things have changed. We're talking about this on the way in. We're not living in the 1970s or 1990s now where everyone wants to mow their lawn on Saturday. You know, most people just go to work, they both work, pick up the kids from daycare if they've got them, and then they go to the cafe or they go over to the beach and look at the big houses at the beach, you know? So things can change.
So that's encouraging news anyway. Sri Lanka has just voted itself a Marxist president. Anura Kumara Dissanayake. So he's won presidential election.
His first Marxist leader.
Sri Lanka's been plagued with problems, you know, incompetence and corruption and all sorts of things.
They had a problem because of that economic crisis they had about a couple of years ago.
Well, they have a civil war and then they had an economic crisis.
And
corruption as well.
Because the former president, not the one that's just, not the one that was the interim one, but the one before that, she did a bolter.
Did you?
Yeah,
Sheikh, what's that?
That's the lady in Bangladesh. Oh, Bangladesh. That's Bangladesh. Did a bolt.
Yeah, I think she did a bolt, I think, that one.
Yeah.
Did she? Okay, not sure. But Sri Lanka, as I say, it's had its share of problems, but it's interesting to see how it goes, of course.
Because Sri Lanka defaulted on its international monetary bailout in 2022.
And they had problems with the fuel. People were lining up for fuel and they would be there for...
They couldn't figure out how to pay for it. You know you're in trouble when there's no money in the kitty to pay for the boat that's got the fuel offshore.
So hopefully it'll be a turning point for the better.
So it's been
having troubles for quite some time, eh?
It's been off and on over the years.
Yeah.
As you say, French Civil War... incessant, what do we call incessant or consistent?
Who's their neighbour? India's their neighbour, I suppose.
Across the way.
Yeah,
there were assassinations and all sorts of stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, they had a few tragic bomb attacks and blasts, etc.
A couple of them coincided with cricket tours there.
Yeah, well, I think we didn't travel for that reason, wasn't it?
Yeah, we had... In 94, there were I think he was the head of the military, was assassinated with a big bomb. And New Zealand had a cricket tour over there.
And we came home, did we?
Some of them came home because they saw things that they would never want to see. Things being drooped over trees and stuff like that.
It's not pretty.
Not pretty at all.
Oh, well, good luck to the guy. Let's hope they,
He doesn't let the people down. But he's got a tough call, though. He's got...
Well, the trouble is if you're in debt, often you have to take the pain you've got to take the people with you.
Dissanayake, I think that's his name.
Yeah.
How they say it.
And is he a lame duck? Has he got the support of the parliament, etc.?
He received 5.7 million votes.
Yeah.
Followed by, I think, the interim person who was Premadasa.
Yeah.
He was the other...
He was the one before, wasn't he?
I think the incumbent Liberal, Wickremesinghe, I think was the interim one.
So was it a parliamentary election or just a
presidential election?
Just a presidential one. See, that's what, is interesting. Quite often we sort of have these things where they have a parliamentary election and it's a bit like America, but then they have a presidential election which... It sort of takes away the will of the people. Look at the President of the United States. He can do what he likes, It's like a king,
But I think in Sri Lanka's case, I think...
It's a bit more tied up.
The previous one, the one that preceded Wickremesinghe, that was when the whole thing collapsed, didn't it?
Yeah.
But they don't mention his name in here, that one.
Okay.
Yeah.
Watch the space.
Yeah.
Well, I hope he does a good job.
Yeah.
That's all you can say.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And another thing that caught my eye was economics of a need for speed. This is Simon Wilson's fairly extensive article, so I can't go through all of it. But I never thought I'd agree with Wayne Brown that congestion, because Auckland's pretty bad, congestion is not caused by low speed limits, it's caused by too much traffic.
Yeah.
It's a real no-brainer, but Simeon Brown's determined to go ahead with increasing speed limits because he thinks it's going to increase productivity.
Okay.
So you can do more wheelies in his naughty car.
Yeah. So when you're a queue of traffic, you're allowed to go 70 rather than 50 k's, but you're still on a queue of traffic.
Speedy halt when the lights change.
Yeah, yeah.
But they said that, because Auckland's got 880 kilometres of roads. And surprisingly enough, when the Labour government dropped the speed limits, the number of deaths and injuries also dropped.
A correlation, isn't there?
So the theory is that those numbers will go back up again with people. I mean, people are bad enough now driving, but...
And you know what? I always find it the people who can afford big muscle cars and SUVs and top-of-the-range cars, of course, if there is an accident... They survive.
Yeah, they take the other person out. Yeah.
And the person in the little sort of second-hand car, etc.
Little Fiat.
Struggling going to work, that...
Collateral damage.
Yeah, they're the ones that get knocked around. And always, there's an ad on TV, I don't know if it's still going on, they're running an ad about buying a good car if you can, but they don't take into account, a lot of people can't afford to buy a good car.
No, they can't.
They just need a car that gets them to work.
I think it's old Brown... Simeon,
he's advocating light rail in that article.
That's what a lot of people would say. That's what you call an integrated transport system.
Yeah.
That's what the country requires, not more bloody roads.
Well, Wellington is our best example, probably, we have a rail system and bus system and cars, but it certainly seems to work a lot better. And that was forced upon them by the geography of their land. But it does work. If you're going to increase the population, and hello,
you need infrastructure.
You need infrastructure.
Yeah, it was Brown and Seymour whose voices were the loudest over increased speed.
Yeah.
And Seymour sounds like, how dare Nanny Stats tell us how fast we can drive?
Well, that's Mike Hoskin also goes on. He's a good driver, et cetera.
In his opinion.
But I say the trouble is because they can afford good cars, if they do have a mistake, they're not the ones that tend to get hurt or killed.
No, because the cars they drive are designed for minimising impact.
What else have they got there?
We were talking about just before it came on air, Luxon hits out at ANZ Tax Views. This is the ANZ, boss of ANZ, Antonia Watson, who believes that taxing investment properties at the point of sale was fair. Because she said people invest in housing for the purpose of getting the capital gain on it, and she says, why shouldn't that not be part of the tax take?
And
Luxon was dismissive
like usual.
It's Parker from the Labor thing. That's why they wanted to have this debate. You buy a second house, and it's you buy a beach house or whatever because you got spare money or whatever. Sure, you get the luxury of the beach house, but it's also land banking. Yeah, so you also enjoy
Sell it on, you've netted a nice little profit.
Yeah, potentially. Yeah.
What was it? Luxon's last one was about $900,000,
and it's not usually a little profit.
Yeah. No,
His
comment was, "You don't tax your way out of recession; you grow your way out of recession." That's just a load of dingo's kidney.
Grow what?
You can't keep on growing.
It's just
this mantra that the elites around the planet seem to have. No, we've got to grow the economy.
It's
a finite point.
Yeah, but don't look at us.
Who benefits from the growing of an economy?
So that was interesting. And Senior New Zealand First Minister Shane Jones referred to Greenpeace as blood-sucking vermin.
I think he just said it when he looked in the mirror, didn't he?
Well, Axe Simon...
Did he really?
Yeah, according to the article. And Axe Simon Court has called the group thugs whose actions are anti-humanity. That's sort of stretching credibility, isn't it? I mean... Because Greenpeace are quite upset, saying no seabed mine, and seabed mine is fast track. It will be in contempt of all expert advice and the wishes of local iwi, environmental groups, Taranaki communities, and the 60,000 New Zealanders who've signed the petition so far. Shane Jones just,
Well, and let's face it, they have a purpose. Organisations like Greenpeace, Forest and Bird, at the end of the day, you've got a government, et cetera, and they get voted in.
Mm.
But, organisations that aren't tend to be that well represented, the birds can't talk for themselves or anything, they actually need organisations or the fish.
And those organisations are necessary to point things out that the government may not have thought of.
And even if they don't win, they often calm the real... ruthlessness out of it anything else, or in a occasion they do get a victory because it just doesn't make sense. And it was like the commissioners were going to decide what could be fast-tracked, and there was a big demonstration in Auckland and people wrote in and they backed off on that.
Because it's
anti-democratic. You've got three guys who don't necessarily know anything about the environment or about whatever.
They've reverted
back to a more generalistic panel to make these look at it. So it can work, and that's what I support Greenpeace. I support a lot of green organisations, so they keep a check on development and everything else. And so at least we know about it. Otherwise, how would we know about it? Exactly. There's a deal done between the two parties over mining the seafloor somewhere, and
backroom deal.
We don't know.
Usually dirty.
Well, we don't know.
But so those organisations are paramount, really, to help people be informed.
Checks and balances, they call it.
And worldwide.
Yeah, well, yeah, it's not just peculiar to New Zealand.
Yeah. Keeps them honest, yeah.
Well, but we can try.
There was an article on one of your pages about this. You remember the saga about the removal of rubbish tins and...
It's ongoing, yeah.
Discarded rubbish bins cost $800 to $1,000 each, and they're just there's a photo of them.
What city?
Okay, up in Auckland.
Okay,
Auckland.
They were just dumped them,
In the domain. Yeah. But it doesn't look good. But they said Auckland Council says bins being stored near the Auckland domain can be refurbished and reused.
Surely,
but surely to me that looks like something that would hurt your eye.
Okay, I got my glasses on.
Oh, eyesore, I should say.
Eyesore.
Okay, so they've just dumped stuff there, right?
Yeah.
Not a good look, especially if there's a road going past, isn't it? You know?
But it's in the domain, so that's a place where people walk their animals.
It's a centre for people.
And there must be yards that they can put it in.
Sure.
Maybe it is in a yard, maybe, but near the Auckland domain. It's not in the Auckland domain, it's near the Auckland domain.
I'm surprised how much bins cost to make. It just seems exorbitant.
Yeah, it's at the Carey Street Depot at the near the Auckland Domain.
Right, yes, but it just looks ugly, eh?
Yeah.
Okay. So that's all you got there, Mick?
Yeah, I'm afraid so.
Speaking of rubbish, I see Sarah Thompson was leading they were doing a clean-up somewhere at Melville or somewhere, and she was saying there needs to be more sort of concentrated efforts to try and keep our city
cleaner. Just in our area, those bins used to be open, cleaned out once a day. Now it seems to be every other day, and they're just chock-a-block of wrappers from the cafe across the road and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And it's starting to look real messy. It's just
untidy.
And I always say to people,
and that encourages vermin.
Well, and it's not even that. You get a messy street. It just looks tardy.
It puts people off,
I'm a bit weird, but I always, if I can, always pick up the rubbish when I'm walking somewhere. Especially if I see a bin in the distance, I think I've got a spare hand. I can do it because it might not be my rubbish, but it is my suburb or it is my planet.
Well, if you take pride of your area,
and lots of people doing it. We were at the park,
a while ago, wasn't it?
You
recently,
was that?
Yeah. Oh, okay. The same day we spotted them.
Yeah, we both spotted them, different places. Yeah. And they were just walking along Wairere Drive, three or four picking up rubbish.
Do they have a picker wrapper?
Yeah, little picker wrappers. Isn't that better than just putting your lycras on and biking around? Biking around and going to a cafe, doing some good,
That is good.
Community good. Because you do feel they've done research on it, and people who do stuff for the community or for someone else rather than themselves, they say it's actually very therapeutic.
I'd agree with that.
It makes you feel good about the place where you live.
Yeah, that sort of stuff.
But the amount of rubbish that's generated by all these cafes is phenomenal.
We have improved some of the, gone from plastic to paper, et cetera, or card, et cetera. We don't eat at home as much. People buy a lot more stuff, And it's there to buy, I guess.
Hence
more rubbish, Cheaper, like talking about shoes, etc. Shoes might be a lot cheaper than they used to be, but they don't last as long. What happens to them?
I said the other day that my shoelaces last longer than the shoes.
Once upon
a time, it was the other way around.
And what happens to that? Once you discard your shoe or your clothes...
It's going
to
go in the landfill, isn't it?
And it doesn't rot down if it's made of plastic.
Yeah, has it?
Well, it does eventually, but...
A few thousand years.
A long time. Yeah.
And, of course, this week was the UN conference, World Leaders. I didn't see Mr. Peters...
He was having a whinge, wasn't he, about...
He complained about people talking while he was speaking.
Oh, he's being ignored.
But that's a good thing.
The end of the day, they all get their chance, but they all show, the good speeches inside of it.
Yeah, there were some from the countries that are most going to be most affected by environmental issues.
Yeah.
But the same platitudes and hand-wringing from the people who could actually do something about it.
I listened to two speeches.
Who'd you listen to?
Cyril Ramaphosa.
Oh, yeah.
And Abdullah Jordan.
Yeah. And what do you think of those?
I was still impressed with them.
Yeah,
there's a lot of representatives like that too.
Who
are mostly going to be affected by climate change.
Yeah, I think war, or the effects of war, refugees.
Ramaphosa he emphasised on apartheid, how South Africa got rid of it, and it was emphasising what's going on in the Middle East with what Israel's up to. Yeah. While Abdullah was talking about children being killed as a result of all these bombings, and trying to think about getting away of or being financed away getting aid into Palestine via his nation, but that would be rather difficult.
It would be a hard job. I mean, I think yesterday's news on Al Jazeera that Israelis damaged or attacked UN cars.
Oh, well, they'll attack any sort of aid, So, and let's face it, Jordan's...
And this is supposed to be the moral army and democracy.
Because Jordan's the end is the West Bank, but Israel controls the border between the West Bank. There's a gap in between there, and Israel controls that. So it's not like Jordanians could just throw stuff over the fence and be picked up by the people in the West Bank. Doesn't work like that.
No.
And, of course, Gaza is completely isolated. And Egypt did have a border, which it still technically does, but of course, physically, Israel now controls that border.
The Philadelphia.
So the Israelis, in their the way they believe they do things, is they now control it all.
Yeah.
They decide who lives and dies, how much food they get.
Yeah.
You know, who they're going to, what they're going to blow up next. They're running out of targets, of course.
Well, I found some new ones in Lebanon with those pages going off.
I'm quite amazed at the Palestinians, and I know that, you know, I put my hat in the ring that I know that I've been a supporter of the Palestinian struggle for years, but they haven't surrendered.
No, they're still determined.
That is just phenomenal.
Because they know what happens if they do, they'll just get kicked out.
Yeah, but, you know, they just haven't surrendered. No. They are just putting up with it.
So determined, aren't they?
Yeah, which is a credit. You know, it's amazing, and it's been awful on them. And you imagine, Israelis have won in lots of ways. How many women will be getting pregnant in Gaza at present? You've got bad food, they've lost their menfolk. Yeah. So the birth rate is plummeting. What do Israelis want? They want to plummet the birth rate of what they'd call Arabs.
Yeah.
Because it's all about populations, etc.
Yeah.
So, you know, the population of Gaza will be, and it's like often in war, it just dives. Where else? Ukraine's the same thing. Mm. There's a war going on there. The population and the amount of births per hundred...
It's gone down.
It goes down. Oh, no one wants to have a baby when you're insecure. You know? It might happen by accident, but it's not, let's have a baby and it can play outside under the olive tree. The Israelis will blow it up. Interesting.
A couple of things out of that.
Yeah.
The shutting down of... Al Jazeera's operations in Ramallah.
Yeah,
and how it was done.
Yeah.
He just showed up with a heavily armed, whoever they were.
And they tore down. This is how petty they are.
Yeah.
They, in the Al Jazeera, which was, who was the
Shireen,
journalist?
Shireen Abu-Akleh.
Yeah, they had a portrait of her up there.
Memorial type arrangement. Yeah.
And they tore it off the wall. And this is, you know, this is a, she was an Al Jazeera staff member.
Who was murdered by them.
Yeah, so, but just shows you how petty that.
Yeah.
That goes beyond, but that's not professionalism, that's just...
You reverse that, and the Arabs have gone into a Jewish president press shop office and tore some...
Jewish rabbi's photo down the wall. It went all over the Western media. Oh, you know, anti-Semitic, blah, 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 you know? Yeah.
And the other one, as I said, you mentioned the bombing of South Lebanon and and the spineless ceasefire calls of the West.
Oh, it's just unbelievable.
Yeah, it's sad. And it's sad, like, they've done their darndest with the Palestinians in Gaza and to a certain extent in the West Bank. Now they're just going to have a go at the Lebanese, and they don't, same thing.
Yeah.
Okay, there's eight sort of Hezbollah operatives in the building. We'll take the building now. Doesn't matter if we kill another 40.
I think it was on the news this morning. It took out six large apartment blocks.
Just collapsed. Just collapsed.
Dust,
yeah.
Probably those bombs came from the United States of America.
So let's face it, and America's making money out of this.
Yeah.
Mm. And not just America, wealthy people around the world who have shares in munitions companies are also, their dividends are going up, their share values are going up, tax-free.
But the Americans don't see any contradiction in terms of calling for a ceasefire and still supplying.
No, and that's the tragedy of it.
It's meanness. It's,
you know, they're providing their weaponry and then they go, oh, we'll give them some aid.
We're still banging on peace. Israel needs to be able to defend itself. It's gone past defending it.
When you attack someone, you know. Yeah.
So basically that Lebanon's a sovereign state. Someone said that's open war.
And it's got huge problems too, Lebanon.
It's been a basket case financially for a long time.
Yeah, it's got problems with its health system. Not just as a result of the pager stuff. They were speaking to a doctor who was saying this has gone on for a number of years.
I wouldn't call it a problem to take pager stuff. It's terrorism from the pager.
But we know that part. But he was talking about that the problems of the health system predate all that.
But in America, in the West, of course, the pager attacks weren't considered terrorism at all.
Really?
It was just fair game.
So we could make weaponized gadgets and send them to the United States administration.
And that's the tragedy of it, you know. But that's the hypocrisy. Yeah. It's all right if we do it to them, but if they do it to us, we will squeal.
We'll be squealing like pigs.
And
the other one that was one of the, I think it was a Democracy Now, one of their programs I picked up, how the Israelis have been continuously harassing, intimidating Lebanon anyway. By flying over and doing all sorts of things.
What do you call sonic booms with their planes? Because let's face it, everyone goes out about a war. Israel is the fourth most powerful, maybe fifth most powerful military in the world with American support.
Yeah.
Okay, so this isn't a you and me having a fisticuffs outside over a pair of shoes.
No.
One side's got antiquated, if it's lucky, it can land something, can do some damage, even kill, etc. But it can't. It's not an equal fight.
No.
But if you look at the Western media, it's like it's an equal fight.
It's not. The other one that you're talking about weapons. Zelensky was in town, and he went to this armaments factory, and I think it was in Philadelphia.
Yeah,
it was in Pennsylvania somewhere.
Oh, that was revolting. They signed bombs.
Yeah.
Oh, right. And I was disgusted when the Israelis did it, and Haley, what was her name? The American politician, Haley.
What's her first name?
Nicola
Haley.
Yeah.
And she went in and signed, this is signing unguided military missile warheads that were being used again in Gaza. They're just firing them in there. There's no, they're guided and we're going to take out two bad guys. This was just lobbying. And they were signing, you know?
Yeah.
And then they do it in America. This is awful. It's repulsive. It's just... I just say one thing back to on Lebanon? There is the difference with what's also in Lebanon is because it's a sovereign state, they can leave. Like the people in Gaza haven't been able to leave. They're just in a wide fenced off area. They've got the sea on one side, three side with fences in Israel. Israelis now because the Egypt's no longer in the equation. Whereas the Lebanese can flee into Syria,
Turkey,
and also up the other end at this stage. But it's still okay. And whether Israel will invade it or not. I doubt it. I think they'll go back to just what the Americans do. They'll just bomb.
Yeah.
They'll just destroy it until they ever... and then they'll... Because what they want is to get their Israeli citizens back into the occupied...
Illegal settlements.
They want to get back into northern... They call it northern Israel, their land, etc.
Illegally occupied.
But because those Israel... Ever since October the 7th last year... Those Israeli citizens have had to leave that area.
Yeah.
And so they've been put up in Tel Aviv and other areas, which because of the lack of tourism, they've been able to do because there's no one wanting to go and visit Israel, surprise.
They shouldn't be there anyway.
So they've got at least they can get out. The poor old Gazans and the West people in the West Bank.
People trapped
in the West Bank can run around in a circle, but imagine being in a fenced off compound. You can't get out. You can't say, can I go over to prison from Jordan. Can we go there for a couple of weeks till it calms down? They can't get to Jordan. No,
it's just like Warsaw Ghetto stuff.
Yeah, they can't get to Egypt, you know, unless the Israelis try and corral them out, which they could do yet. They could do, yeah.
In the meantime, America's given carte blanche to Israelis just to carry on. I mean, every time they come up with a near solution, Israel moves the goalposts.
Yeah.
So they're not really interested in negotiating anything. They just want to keep the war going as long as possible and push all these people.
Well, what's a bullet worth? What's an artillery shell worth? There's money in it for the wealthy around the world.
Yeah.
You know, war's good. War's great for business. America is a war economy. That's how it got to be. It just makes its money out of war and energy, but mainly munitions, you know. So,
How much money they made out of the First World War. How much money they made out of the Second World War. Yeah. Blah, blah, blah.
Vietnam and even Afghanistan. And they've honed their expertise because they used to sort of send in the peasants who'd fight and they'd lose some troops. Was now after Vietnam, which they got embarrassed about, the body bags came back, and even Afghanistan to a certain extent. After Afghanistan, they go, well, actually, we don't even need to go there. We just need to supply the weapons and some other guys will die on our behalf, i.e. the Ukrainians.
And we just send drones in and missiles.
Yeah, we can fight from afar. And we're safe because we're over there. You know? What they don't realise is that eventually you can intimidate, you can dominate, you can be the hegemonic, but everyone hates you. And you saw a good example of that when Netanyahu got up to speak at the UN. Apart from the sycophants,
The Vaseline people.
Apart from the sycophants and those that look at tying up their shoelaces a lot in the presence of America and Mr. Netanyahu, they just walked out. I hope we did too, but I've got a feeling we didn't.
No, I know we supported that resolution around boycotting.
There were big demonstrations, but did you see that? Did you see the big demonstrations on TV1 News or anything?
No, I didn't see anything.
No. But, they were. So there's Americans in America know it's wrong and they want to get Netanyahu arrested, just like anyone else who allegedly commits a war crime. But, we're very much in the...
They seem to be following the mantra, like they can hate as long as they fear us.
A
bit like Caligula.
Until somebody thrusts a sword in the nether regions.
What they don't, and I've said it before, what they don't realise is eventually Israelis will get sick. They might be dominant ones, but they won't be able to go anywhere in the world apart from to an evangelical church meeting in the Pacific Islands somewhere or, in America. They'll say, where are you from? You won't be saying, I'm from Israel. You'll be using your dual passport, slip that out of your other pocket and go, I'm from Poland.
But you got a big nose.
I don't think you're allowed to go there.
that's what they did. The Nazis did.
Caricatures.
They're the caricatures. They'll give them away. Nose is one.
Well, then there's a lot of names. But do they not just have dual citizenships? Do they also have? Can you use your Polish? You've got a Polish passport as well as an Israeli passport. Would it be the same name?
Possibly not.
How does it work? Because they say Netanyahu was a different name. He changed it.
Yeah, well, we know that from your Russian history that Lenin, he was Ulanov. Trotsky was Lev Bronstein or something like that.
Okay.
Davinich.
Okay, yeah.
And
so they had alter egos.
Stalin, he had a Georgian name.
Yeah. So they can change their names.
They can do. It could be a sort of a anglicised type name compared to a sort of an indigenous name.
So it's not... The awfulness is that we've seemed to, in the West, decided that this is the Crusades and we don't care how many people, how many brown people the Israelis kill because we're actually in the Crusades mentality.
Yes, that's why I didn't really bother with the UN. It was just lots of platitudes and hand-wringing
and coming out of it.
A meaningless twaddle.
Nothing
with any bite. No. I see the French have been pushing for... I think he spoke at, I can't remember, it was UN or something. Yeah, but he's...
Macron.
Macron, he's pushing for some sort of settlement, some sort of
Well, in Lebanon, because don't forget the French had it was a colony, etc.
Lebanon and Syria,
So the French still have some connection. There's French is still spoken in Lebanon or not. So they won't like that what's happening, because it's all very well going, oh, well, it's Hezbollah. But Hezbollah, sure, they occupy the south side against the border with Israel. Yeah. But then, of course, there's suburbs that are Christian. Hezbollah and Druze, Christian, all through Lebanon. So it's quite divided. And they've had internal scraps.
Oh, yeah.
And some dreadful massacres, which the Israelis looked the other way. You know, this was in, what's the name, Sabrinka or something like that?
In the 1980s, yeah.
Yeah, there was a dreadful massacre of Palestinian refugees, of course.
And that was Ariel Sharon, wasn't it?
Israelis didn't do it, but they sort of had control of the...
They facilitated.
They had control of the perimeter of the ghetto, and then they let the others who didn't like the others, and they slaughtered them. So, yeah, so...
Terrible blood.
So Lebanon, of course, is potentially... struggles anyway.
Mm.
But if Israel knocks it around so much, what happens then?
Yeah.
I mean, they're talking about trying to declare the Yemenis as terrorists now, because they've been doing a thing about stopping ships going through and stuff like that.
Well, let's face it, who's actually tried? You got the Yemenis. They've signed up to the Genocide Convention. We're all meant to be trying to stop genocide.
Yeah.
And they're doing their way. That's their mechanism to try and stop it.
They're only a weak, poor country. They can't do a lot against Israel and the West.
They've already been kicked around by Saudi Arabia.
Israelis no doubt will take a few more of them out when it suits them. At what time, But they've sworn Palestinians are their brothers, and they've sworn that they're going to try and do their
bit more
spine
than some of the other Arab countries.
One in particular.
But the bottom line is the Arab countries are all still quite beholden to the Western money and influence, etc. Egypt, Saudi Arabia, and all that.
But they particularly like that one, Fred.
Syria's. Got its civil war. We've got to remember, America still occupies part of Syria. Up in there, where the oil is.
It's a few years now, isn't it?
Yeah, but it still occupies. It also occupies an area on the Jordan border with Syria. It's got an area there that's a no-go zone that America controls, America's...
Doing the very thing that they would not tolerate themselves.
Well, you imagine
a foreign power occupying a piece of America, saying,
"Yeah." Or a foreign power like China or Russia went up to Mexico and said, "Oh no, we're going to occupy this part." Yeah. You imagine America? They'd be just beside themselves.
Spewing.
If they occupied Alaska.
Look at the performance in America over the Chinese weather balloon. Yeah. Oh my God!
They had Saint Vitus's dance big time.
Yeah. And what did they discover in the end? Oh no, it was a weather balloon. Chinese told them that, but did they trust them?
But the story's still going around on websites that Chinese military.
It was just hysteria.
It's hysteria. Yeah. But, America needs to have an enemy, and they want to be dominant. They want to, don't just want to be the hegemonic power, they want to dominate, and they won't rest until they've sorted Russia and China out, sadly. And the Chinese and Russians know that, and so does a lot of the rest of the world. No. And that's why China trades with other countries, etc. But America's trying to squeeze them as much as they can.
Yeah.
Yeah, but China might be overtaking them anyway, economically.
Economically, but America still has the military edge by far, and it still has technological edge. And it also has the allies. You've got to remember, America has Europe in its pocket. It has the UK in its pocket. Yeah. It has Australia in its pocket. It has New Zealand in its underpants. It's... is that going too far? Okay.
The white balls.
But, the bottom line is they have a lot of allies and,
It's bought into this garbage.
But it'd be interesting with India, because India and China have started to... they've had this border skirmishes. And there's lives been lost, so it's serious. But... of course, there's been talk between the Chinese and the Indians to try and sort of resolve it or calm the farm, so to speak. Right. But of course, there's other interests that don't want them to calm the farm.
Mm. Yes, yes.
You know, but I think India will go its own way.
Because it's not aligned.
It's not aligned, and I don't think it wants to be aligned. See, look at India still quite heavily buying Russian products and whatever else, and stuff from China and vice versa. And I think India, you know, let's face it, it was knocked around by the Raj and by the British Empire and all that. So that they probably want to have a non-aligned sort of pathway. I mean, that's what they talk about.
Yeah. Iran's another non-aligned country.
Yeah, but they're weak compared to the power of the West.
Yeah, they are.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the reality, and everything's done in the American dollar, which the BRICS system is trying to circumnavigate that to a certain extent, and they will to a certain power. You know, if you've got something I want and I've got something you want, we don't have to trade in American dollar if we're quite happy with the value. We can just figure out, I'll give you three of mine, you give me two of yours.
Yeah.
You know, that's what it was. But and America doesn't really want that because, you know, American dollars, they make money out of it.
Yeah. And I said I want to reform the Security Council. It was on during the week, and two African nations have been invited to become permanent members, I think. And the US ambassador to the UN thought that was a bad idea. It would make the council dysfunctional.
It's already dysfunctional now, even more so.
So she's upset these two African countries.
Yeah, well, don't we have it? They have the permanent members.
Permanent members,
and then you have guest appearances.
Yeah, they usually do
turns. We've been on it at times and all that.
Yeah, Peter wants us back there. Yeah,
but of course, and that's what Helen Clark was going on about, the use of the veto and all that by all sides has meant it doesn't do anything. No. When anything major comes up, unless they all agree to pick on usually a poor little African country, then, Russia vetoes whatever the Yanks want to do and the Yanks veto whatever the Israelis want to do.
That's where the major reform needs to happen, is that veto.
If it's to survive, because otherwise, what does it mean?
Yeah.
It's pointless.
Yeah.
They'll have a resolution, we pass it by 100 nations to
be wiped out
by one of those nations.
Yeah.
Like that.
Yeah, just like that.
In the veto. That's a reform.
Yeah.
Yeah. My way of thinking, the UN should never have ever been based in New York.
No.
Or the United States, full stop.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. I agree with that. Because let's face it, America, okay, it chucks all the money in and it is the superpower, but then it also the UN and becomes it, under their
And also
influence.
They can threaten to withdraw their contribution to the UN if the UN is trying to do things that they don't like.
Yeah. They don't like, which they do.
Yeah, they have done in the past.
They have done.
Yeah, because it's foreign of the League of Nations was based in Switzerland.
Mm.
Yeah. Maybe it should have stayed there.
Well, we need a country that has said we're neutral, we're not, you know, maybe India, something like that, that is a non-aligned, you know. But we won't accept that. We as Europeans, we've still got that sort of supremacist thinking going on.
Yeah. We're better than them.
You know, we can't possibly have an Asian or an Indian or Arab or African, sadly, but there's still that attitude there.
Oh, it prevails, unfortunately.
Yeah, there's lots of things wrong with it. Like there was on the news yesterday that there was a woman, I can't remember her name, unfortunately, but she's advocating that it's about time that they had their first female Secretary General.
Because
women represent 50% of the planet's people.
Well, Clark got close.
But she's seen as a bit too...
I don't know how she got close, but he's done a good job, Gutierrez.
I think he is.
Considering that he's hogtied by the system of vetoes and America strong-arming, et cetera. But I think he's very, you know, I have been impressed by him. But, you know, you wonder how he sleeps at night because he just thinks, I'm just knocking my head against a wall.
Yeah. But now the ulcers are. Unfortunately.
Yeah, so anyway, apart from that, so what's happening in America is Trump, of course, and Trump got, as we were saying before, Trump's got stuck into Zelensky and Ukraine.
Mm-hmm.
He's really come out and said this shouldn't have happened, but, it still shouldn't happen.
Him expressing those sentiments is almost a bittersweet because he's not doing it out of altruistic or...
No, he isn't.
He's just an opportunist.
Yeah, he is. But then
if the result is that the war finishes, then maybe it's a good thing.
Yeah, because, of course, he's up against... The Democrats have proved to be a really warmongering outfit. You know, and they frightened me because in the end, Harris has already got up at the conference, at the Democratic conference, and said we're going to be the number one. Yeah. We're going to be the military best and all this. You know, a direct challenge to anyone to say that's us, you know. So the Republicans have still got some of that old isolationist thinking. And they've still got, no, we'll just mind our own business. We'll sell things to people and everything else and our dollar will be worth a lot.
But we won't physically go over there.
Yeah, but of course now with modern technology, we don't have to send anyone over there. We can just, you know, the Ukrainians are mad enough against the Russians and vice versa. So we send it to the Ukrainians get blown up in the tank and the Yanks go, how many more tanks? Do you want another tank? And the Ukrainians, oh, yes, please. And that's how it works. They're not dying. They're not coming back in body bags. But dreadful loss of life. Sure, in general, the Russian-Ukrainian war is military combatants, but they're still human beings. Oh, they've still got families and girlfriends and wives and partners, etc., children, and they're fighting over what? Something that should have been sorted by an agreement.
Some years ago.
We're in the third year of the war now.
Is it the third year? 2022. So, you know, it's coming up. But there's money in it. Every time a drone goes off, and the Ukrainians were saying how many million drones they're going to make, and the Russians then replies in kind. Though in the end, you think they'll run out of manpower because population goes down. You can't, there's a heap of Ukrainians don't live in. There's 30 million Ukrainians. I can't remember how many Ukrainians have actually left.
Oh, 8 million. 8 million have left.
Yeah, you know, and gone to neighbouring countries, UK, Ireland, here.
Yeah.
2 or 3 million have gone to Russia itself from that side. Because, let's face it, you're in the war zone.
Yeah,
living in your village, milking your donkey, it ain't going to happen. So they've all had to leave. So
they've got,
there's populations in those
holes. But Ukraine's still using munitions faster than they can be produced.
Yeah. And so is Russia, because the Ukrainians are blowing up some of the large munitions dumps.
And
that's the thing. No one's invincible to the other side. That's quite an. This isn't like Israel versus an Arab with a gun.
This is
the West supplying the Ukrainians with weaponry. That's good, modern, and Russia. So it's far more even a fight.
Great advertising for a munitions company. You know,
battlefield, great if you're a shareholder.
Battlefield tested.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
That's how many people this bomb can kill.
Yeah. I just can't believe that the soldiers on both sides can't realise that they're doing the dying and the main being injured and losing limbs, etc. And the elites on both sides are probably still going on holiday over in, you know, in the Mediterranean. The kids are probably bonking each other on the, you know, at beach parties, you know. Why are they having it? It's just a waste when it could have been settled, you know?
Old
prejudice, and there was prejudice, and the Ukrainians have got a right to be prejudiced, what the Russians did earlier on and all that. But those old hatreds, et cetera, have been fermented to come out.
Yeah. Whipped up.
And people die. And of course, the elite and the children of the elite, are they in there?
No, they're well gone.
That's what I'm saying. They're doing beach parties in the Mediterranean, etc.
Or wherever.
Yeah, they'll start the wars, but the ordinary Joe on the street.
Netanyahu's son's in Florida. He's not walking through Gaza. You know,
how uncomfortable his life he's got. Probably not.
You know, in America, you know, you can probably do no wrong in lots of areas in America if you're an Israeli.
You'd probably be very careful. You go to all those evangelical areas and there'd be,
Levi's
Reign.
And even the wealthy areas, you know, America's, let's face it, they're not that honed on current affairs or world affairs, a lot of Americans.
They've got quite peak ignorant, to be afraid.
And I think that's happening even here, et cetera.
Well, just general dumbing down of the population around the planet, isn't it?
I agree.
I agree with that.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll go off for our dumb self and...
Are we out of time?
Yeah.
We
can be dumbed down as well.
See you next month.
This Free FM podcast was brought to you with support from New Zealand On Air.